Good morning, and welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We are also pleased to welcome back to this program Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He has been here on a regular basis for quite a few years now. He stops by once a month, and we talk about home maintenance. And the idea is, whatever questions you might have, as long as they're about the various pieces and parts of the single-family home, maybe you have a problem, maybe something needs to be fixed, maybe you're thinking about making some changes, doing some remodeling, whatever. He knows a lot about things like siding and windows and doors and gutters and roofs and attics and basements, and you get the idea. All you have to do, if you'd like to talk to him, is call us. Here in Champaign-Urbana, the number 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. That one is good anywhere that you can hear us. So if it would be a long-distance call, use that number, and that is 800-222-9455. So again, 333-9455. That's for here in Champaign-Urbana. And toll-free, 800-222-9455. Welcome back.
Yeah. Good morning. Glad to be back.
We already have some people lined up and ready to go, so we will start. We have a caller on our toll-free line in Lafayette on our line number 4. And right there. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. What's wrong when the coils on my dehumidifier form ice?
Probably you have had a little bit of leakage of the charge on the refrigerant in it. Because the lower the pressure, the lower the temperature. And the other possibility is that you're just not moving enough air through it. So if you have a filter on it or something, that could be blocked. But it's probably low refrigerant pressure.
Okay. Would that be difficult or expensive to have recharged?
It isn't a do-it-yourself job, that's for sure. But you're probably looking $50, $60.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. Let's go next to someone here locally. Caller in Urbana, line number 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question for Mr. Spies regarding footing tile this morning.
Okay.
And I had the sanitary tile fixed last fall, and we discovered, much to our dismay, that the footing tile was hooked into the sanitary, which, of course, is not legal now.
Right.
A lot of roots in there. And the question, I guess, is, it's only 35 feet to the storm sewer, and I've got permission to hook up. There's plenty of fall. But do you think it'd be worth $1,400 to have an outlet to the footing tile?
Well, that sounds a little high to me for that distance. But it definitely is preferable because we don't really want that thing backing up. And the sanitary sewer does periodically. Now, in southeast Urbana, there was a time when the city engineer in Urbana was worried that there wasn't going to be enough flow to keep the sanitary sewer going, so he had the builders hook the footing tile and downspout tiles into the sanitary. Fortunately, that practice was discontinued a good 25 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I would be hooking up, of course, to the
storm sewer. Right.
And it is a bit of a problem. As long as I keep the gutters cleaned out and I don't get any overflow, we don't have any problems in the basement. But if we would happen to go to Florida for a couple of months, there would be nobody, of course, to clean them out.
Right. Are your gutters hooked to that tile also?
No, they're hooked to a separate tile, and it goes out to the gutter of the street.
Right. Okay, that's fine. But, yeah, it would be a possibility. But, yeah, I had a similar situation where somehow or other they got one cross-connected, and the flood damage was far more than
$1,500. Yeah. Well, part of the problem, of course, is that the house is 50 years old, and I don't know what the condition of the footing tile is. I know that it's full of roots at the end where it was connected to the sanitary sewer.
Yeah, well, you can run the equivalent Roto-Rooter or whatever through there and get those out. There are also a couple of firms in town that have a TV camera that they can put down there and find out if the tile is broken or not.
Yeah, I've taken advantage of them with the sanitary sewer a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, at a minimum, if I decide to go ahead with it, I would have them clean it out with a Roto-Rooter and then run their camera in there and see what's going on.
That would be a good starting point.
Now, the problem, of course, is that how do I keep the roots from coming back, or is there any way?
The only chemical method I know of keeping is to put some copper sulfate in it. Copper sulfate will kill roots.
Yeah, I'm not sure that the city will let you put copper sulfate, though, in the storm sewer.
I doubt that they would have any objection.
Uh-huh. Now, I understand that there's something on the market that foams somewhat. Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not.
The foam, of course, according to the manufacturer, the foam is better than, just pouring something in a liquid, because it would foam up and, of course, get to the top of the tile as well as the bottom.
Yeah. Well, as I say, I've not had much problem when we've been able to get some copper sulfate in.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I do have an opening in the footing tile at the other end of the house, so I could easily pour it in there if it's a matter of having access to it.
Mm-hmm.
So you think it would be worth $1,400 then to have the
considering what it would cost you if it flooded, yes.
Yeah. And I don't want to think about that. I can't do much more than that. There isn't much fall in the backyard. I got maybe a full bubble width of slope away from the house at one end, and it's just about flat at the other end. There would be another possibility of adding more dirt up by the foundation, but it's about 12 inches away from the wood siding at one end and about 18 inches at the other end. How close can you get to wood siding and still not have to worry too much about termites?
6 inches.
Six. Okay, so I could add another 6 inches there.
Yeah.
The problem is I'd have to put something over the window well, and
yes.
The worst problem, of course, is my pad for the air conditioner.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to somehow isolate it. But 6 inches is that's good news.
Yeah. Well, 8 is nice, but we can work with 6.
Yeah. Well, that would give me a slope, an adequate slope in case the gutters do run over.
Right.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Yep, bye now.
This is Focus 580, our morning talk show here, WILL. My name is David Inge, and I'm the host, and the guest is Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He is on the program once a month, and this is what we do. We invite people to call in with home care, home maintenance questions, and I know Hank will do his best to give you an answer. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, that's the number to use. And then we do also have a toll-free line, and that is 800-222-9455. And next, we'll talk with someone in Champaign on line 2. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I need a roof on an older house. Is it? It's an older house that has a 45-degree pitch, or in other words, the peak is 90-degree angle. Very strong roof. It has two roofs on it now. I wonder what you would think about adding the steel type imitation shingles that Menards sells on top of two roofs. Is that legal?
No. Two roofs is the maximum allowed by code.
Oh, I see. Do the contractors ever just take off one roof and replace that, or do they always insist on taking everything down?
Generally speaking, you need to take it all the way back. It's a lot easier to take off all the way back to the sheeting.
Okay, so when I get an estimate, then I'll don't even need to ask that question, I guess.
All right.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. And the reason that the code says no more than two layers of shingles, that has to do with the weight?
As much as anything else, it's weight, yes. Mm.
Okay. So if you have one on there, you can go one on top of that. But
right,
if you get that and you got to replace it, it's all got to come off.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's go to line 3 and Champaign. Hello.
Hi. Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I had a question somewhat along the caller before this last one. We just put in a new house, and we've got PVC piping going out into the septic system. And with planting season, we put two lilacs on either side of that. PVC pipe, and I'm wondering if that's going to be a problem.
With PVC, it shouldn't be. That's got fully cemented joints.
Yeah, and, well, it just can't get a toehold into that, so it shouldn't be a problem.
No, it shouldn't be.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, very good. Well, other questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free 800-222-9455 if you have questions for our guest, Hank Spies. Well, we've now had, over the past few days, we've had some pretty warm temperatures. A little taste of summer, which we know could get even warmer and more humid. So maybe there are people thinking about cooling as opposed to heating. And maybe folks have not yet turned on their air conditioner. Maybe some people have. But in any case, what sort of maintenance kind of issues should you be thinking about?
Well, basically, be sure that you've got a clean filter in it so that we're not restricting the flow. We also want to clear any growth away from the outside unit so that we have clean airflow through the outside unit. As a matter of fact, it probably would do well to turn the power off to the outside unit and get out there with a hose and hose it down. Wash all the dirt out of the coil, and your efficiency will go up. But that's basically the criteria. Is we've got to be able to get good flow through the filter in the house and then good airflow through the outdoor unit.
Okay, well, that's what we suddenly got the phone lines lit up, so let's get back to people who are listening. We have someone in Champaign, and that's line number one. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yes.
I wonder if Mr. Spies has a recommendation or an idea about the whole house tankless water heaters, both as regards to their reliability and also the economy of them. Thank you.
Basically, they work pretty well in this area. There are certain parts of the country where they don't do well because the water temperature incoming is too low. But, yes, they will work. If you're using one that has pilot lights on it rather than electric ignition, I'm not sure that the saving is great, in that with the insulation we're putting on standard water heaters these days, the pilot light will keep it warm if you're not using it. So, as a matter of fact, many times we find that it's by morning, it's over the temperature setting. So I'm not sure that it saves much of anything. The only problem we had with them was when they first started appearing in this country 15, 20 years ago, was parts availability. That is pretty well taken care of now. So I think that there's no real problem. They save space. I'm not convinced that they necessarily, if you have a pilot light system, I'm not convinced that it saves energy. If you have an electric ignition system, it may.
Now, is this where we're talking about some kind of on-demand heating system rather than having, well,
rather
most people
having
have it, having a tank full of hot water just sitting there?
Right. So that anytime you draw water, the flame or whatever, it can be very useful. Sometimes we have little units that will fit under a lavatory in the far end of the house so that we get instant hot water, some things like that. But as far as the whole house unit is concerned, there's a little bit of question if you're on a pilot light system whether it's really going to save much of anything.
Okay. So that is the reason that people – well, the application that you talked about, we've talked about that with people that they say, you know, I've got this bathroom and it's a long way away from where the water heater is, and somehow by the time the hot water gets there, it's not hot anymore.
Yeah.
So they say, what can you do? And, well, you can put in something, a small heater that will just – it will heat the water for a sink, for example. But now this is a thing that you would be doing this for the water for the whole house. Is energy saving that the reason that people would – do something like that?
Energy and space, because this thing can mount on a wall someplace. You don't have to find a place to put this big tank and that sort of thing. Okay. As they say, as you probably know, I do a lot of work in Colorado. We can't use them out there because the incoming water temperature is too cold. We can't heat it enough. We got to put two of them in a row in order to heat it. Here, that's not really a problem because our incoming water line is usually around 50 degrees. Out there is 34.
Okay. Very good. Well, then, let's go on. Urbana, line number two. Hello.
Did you say line two?
Yes.
Okay, I heard a blank out about that time. Hank, I appreciate your donating your time and expertise. I was wondering about what the latest thinking is on wood preservatives for, I have some new cedar fencing and some, a treated wood gazebo.
Okay, the main problem is we, for many years, used chromated copper arsenate as the treatment or pentachlorophenol. And somebody has decided that these might be an environmental hazard.
Uh-huh.
So they have now substituted a different treatment, the main problem being that the new treatments are highly corrosive, so that we've got to use stainless steel fasteners or triple grip dipped galvanized or something like this, because this new wood eats the heck out of steel.
Oh.
So that's the main problem with it. I really think that we reacted to people crying wolf for no particular reason.
Well.
But they did, so that's what's currently available. Generally speaking, on decks and so on, I would use a water repellent rather than a preservative. And you can use that on a pressure-treated deck. Basically, we're trying to keep the water from soaking in. So a water repellent as versus a preservative would be appropriate for that.
And would I use the same logic on this fence and the gazebo?
Same logic on the gazebo fence. I don't know that there's any good way of keeping cedar posts from rotting.
Well,
I can show you a few beautiful examples on my lot.
Oh.
But theoretically, cedar doesn't rot, but believe me, it does.
Oh. All right. Well, I appreciate your sharing.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Thanks. Well, let me ask you a question about that for a second, because certainly there are some people who are old enough to remember the time we used to put creosote on posts before putting them in the ground, and you're not supposed to do that anymore. What is there something that's recommended if you're going to have wood in contact with the soil, or is the point that you actually should not have wood in contact with the soil?
Well, you don't want to have it, but the new treatments are pretty good, but you have to use, as I say, stainless steel or triple grip dipped galvanized, because the chemicals that they are using now are very corrosive to steel.
Right. So a regular nail would just
it'll eat through it pretty fast.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And on the just again to something, because I know we've talked about this before, you're feeling about on decks, anything like that, you don't want to put anything that says it will make it waterproof.
No.
What you'd like it to do is make it water resistant or repellent.
Okay. Right.
Just because if any moisture that does get in there, you want to make sure that it has a way of getting out.
That's correct. And that's true particularly on brick.
Right.
Because if we hold the water in, it freezes and the brick will fall off.
Right. Okay. All right. Let's go to another Champagne caller, I believe, line 3, right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I have a refrigerator. It's a Whirlpool Super Custom or Special Custom refrigerator. I bought this condo, and it was a part of the deal back in June of 1997. Within the last 6 months or so, and it cools properly, but within the last 6 months or so, when it goes off, it makes this big bow, 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 bang sound. I hope I've dramatized it properly.
You're going to be buying a new refrigerator pretty soon.
Well, I got used to it. It used to frighten me, and if I were to have guests, it probably would frighten them. Is there anything that perhaps is causing that strange noise when the refrigerator shuts down?
Well, I think it's probably near the end of the compressor life.
So when you're near the end of the compressor life, do you put in a new compressor or you buy a new refrigerator?
You buy a new refrigerator.
Okay. So I'm facing a new refrigerator.
Yep, afraid so.
I thought that's what you would say, but thank you very much.
All right, thank you for the call. We'll go to somebody here on a cell phone. This is line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm on a cell phone, so I'll ask my questions and then hang up.
Okay.
I have two questions. I've got an older home that's about 100 years old. And it at one time had pocket doors. Now all the mechanism has been removed. Is there a way to reinstall pocket doors without actually tearing out the wall? That's one question. The second question is, in the chimney, there I have two chambers. One, to it's a masonry chimney, one to the fireplace, and the other one, I'm not sure what it was for, maybe to exhaust a kitchen stove. But I'd like to seal off that other side and wonder if that would be a problem, and would I just cap that with a concrete block?
As long as there's nothing else going into it, you can cap it without any problem.
Okay, thank you.
And
the pocket doors then?
Pocket doors, certainly all the trim would have to come off around them. The PACA, the Preservation and Conservation Association here in town, often has some parts that have been removed that could be reinstalled. But certainly all of the trim would have to come off.
Okay. All righty. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Let's see. We'll go next to Bloomington, Illinois, line number one. Hello.
Hi, Hank.
Yes.
Yes.
I had a question about the new roofing that's a synthetic slate. Are you familiar with that?
Somewhat.
Is that readily available, or does it require a special installation, or is it worth the money, or?
Well, the key question is the last one. Is it worth the money? As far as the installation is concerned, anyone who would be capable of installing slate would be capable of installing this stuff. So basically, how long is it going to last? We don't know. It hasn't been on the market long enough to know for sure just how what its durability is.
Yeah, they're claiming 50 years, but
well,
obviously it hasn't been out for 50 years. So
that's right, it hasn't. And roofing is one of those areas where warranties can be very misleading in that, generally speaking, the warranty only covers the material, and that's usually a minor part compared to the total cost of installation. So besides which, is the company still going to be in existence for 50 years?
Right. Can you put that on just a standard roof? I know that the slate and some of that tiles.
It is not as so heavy. That's one of its major advantages.
Right.
Is that you can use it on a standard roof without the special bracing required for true slate. So I would think it could be done that way. Generally, I haven't had any complaints about it. But as I say, it hadn't been around long enough.
Right. Is that locally available, or is that something you have to go through the manufacturer?
I think the local building material yards can get it for you.
All righty. Thank you.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Is this, and now I'm wondering, I asked you at one point, maybe it was the last time we talked or time before that I had seen on television a product that was made to look like a slate roof, but it was made out of some kind of plastic, I think. Is this what we're talking about? There's just something different.
Basically, there may be some stone particles in it, but it's all bound together with plastic.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. And the nice thing about it was that it was much more durable with slate. If you dropped a piece of slate, it would crack. This stuff.
This doesn't crack as easily. And as I say, it's nowhere near as heavy.
Right.
And
so it is a way of getting the look of slate without the weight of it, and also the fragility of it.
And I'm getting real leery about 50 years on roofs. Hmm. I'm not at all.
Someone tells you 50 years, you think, nah, I don't think so?
Right.
Okay.
General idea.
Okay. But they should last longer than a basic asphalt.
Oh, yes. Shingle. Yes, certainly should.
Okay.
Yeah, the asphalt shingles 20 to 30, these should do better than that. But 50, don't know. My crystal ball is awfully cloudy at that range.
What would be the life of a genuine slate roof?
Oh, well, let's put it this way. When they redid the roof on the Ford Theater in Washington and the bicentennial year, so this was 100 years old. The contractor that redid the roof took the slates off carefully and put them on his house.
Okay. So at least it ought to be good for 100 years.
Well, it was already on the Ford Theater for over 100. And again, it depends on what quarry the slate came from.
Yeah.
A lot of the slate that we have in Champaign-Urbana is from Bangor, Pennsylvania, not
Maine.
Not Maine. And that's not a particularly durable slate. I mean, you know, that's probably a 70-year slate. The Ford Theater had peach bottom slate, and as I said, that's good for at least 150. Mm-hmm.
So. All right. Well, we're about our midpoint here with Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He is here once a month. We talk about home maintenance. If you have questions, you are welcome to call. If you're in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, the number is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. So use that one if it would be a long-distance call for you. Next caller is in Bethany, and this is line two. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I have a little question about my septic system. I think I'm going to have to put new laterals in. I was wondering if Hank could tell me how to do a percolation test.
Well, there's the state plumbing code has a way of doing this, and you have to follow those things. If you have a sanitary district or something in your county, they will probably supervise. But basically, it's a matter of digging the equivalent of a post hole, filling it up with water, see how much the water level drops. In a
given amount of time.
Yeah. But,
and then that determines the size of the lateral system you would need.
That's right. That's right. In many cases, it's less expensive to put in a single house sewage treatment system.
You know, a chlorinated type thing?
Yeah, you can't chlorinate. It depends on what you do. If you let it soak in, you don't have to. But if you want to discharge it to the surface, it's supposed to be chlorinated. And this uses a pump that pumps air through it. See, a septic tank works on anaerobic bacteria.
Yeah.
They don't live on air. These single house treatment systems use an aerobic and pumps air through the things.
And then you don't need a lateral system with that? Is that what you're saying to me?
If you put a chlorinator, which is basically a length of pipe with slow-dissolving tablets that you drop in the top, you can bring it out on the surface.
Okay. So I'm still not. I guess I'm kind of confused about what do you decide? What is a single house?
Well, basically, there are half a dozen different brands: Generation, Multiflow, Norwico, et cetera. And basically, it is a tank that contains a system that pumps air through the sewage and digests it with air rather than without air. And if you would put a little chlorine in it, while it would be singularly unappetizing, it would be safe to drink when it came out the other end.
So is the by pumping air in, does that make it more efficient or something?
Yes,
like that?
By far.
But then you'd also have a pump that you have to run all the time.
That's right. They use about 150 to 200 kilowatts a month.
150 to 200?
Yes.
Shoot.
More than most people think.
Yeah, that's quite a bit. I think I double my usage right now.
You're a very conservative user.
Yeah, I guess I turn the lights out. I'm not in the room. Okay, I'll have to. Looks like I got more research to do than I thought. I guess that's. Well, thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Good luck.
Bye.
Let's go over to Kingman, Indiana for the next call. Line number four, right here. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a truly weird question for you.
Oh, good. We like that.
My husband thinks I'm totally crazy, so I'm kind of eager to see which side you weigh in on. About 7 years ago, my husband and I bought a 16 by 80 mobile home, brand new, put it on piers on three lots of land. At the time, we could not afford a foundation or a basement, so it's just on piers, it's on footers. I would like to move the trailer temporarily to the back side of the lot, keeping it connected to the wells and septic, dig out a foundation, and move the house back and set it on, well, not only a foundation, but a basement. I would like to move the house back and put it on a basement, and then add some rooms onto either side of it, thinking that since we're almost halfway through our 20-year mortgage, it would make more sense to put the money into improving the existing house than going out and buying a brand new house and new foundation and new 30-year mortgage. And like I said, my husband thinks I'm crazy. What do you think?
I'm tempted to agree with him. First of all, if you were going to do something like that, I wouldn't be moving it to the back of the lot. All I would do would be raising it up and digging under it.
Okay.
That way you can maintain connections. I lived in a house where it didn't have a basement. We jacked the whole thing up, dug a basement under it, set it back down again.
And you lived in it while you did that?
And we lived in it while we were doing it.
Wow.
Okay.
I like that idea.
So that is a possibility. I have absolutely nothing against the construction of mobile homes. Generally speaking, if you can pull the thing down an Illinois highway and not have it fall apart, it's pretty well built.
Exactly. Yes.
So some of the materials that they used have not been extremely durable.
And
that's true. Much depends upon what you have.
Well, one of my concerns is in moving it, maybe not in jacking it up, but in torquing the frame of it and damaging the interior wallboards.
Well, basically, you have to be very careful, but I would have a house mover do that.
And absolutely.
Generally speaking, they should have the framing and jacks to do that without seriously disturbing things.
So why would you go the other direction? Why would you put in a new house instead?
I think by the time you price out what you want to do, a new house may well be cheaper.
Hmm.
I mean, get some prices on it. But
so your consideration is strictly monetary and financial?
Yes.
Okay. All right. See,
and
I'm calculating.
The other question is whether your mortgage company is going to be willing to finance it.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Thank you very much.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Bye.
Let's continue here. And our next person in line is in Ashmore and on our line number one. Hello.
Yes. Mm-hmm. How are you this morning?
Good.
Fine.
Listen, I want to know about sealing brick. With what should I use?
A silane or a siloxane product, never a silicone.
Okay. That's my question. Thank you much.
And you'll find the two of the most common brands, probably Prosoco or something like that. You definitely do not want a silicone sealer. You want a silane or siloxane.
Okay. I got you. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks. Now, this is just the issue that we were talking about before when you said you don't want to put any kind of finish on exterior brick that's going to make it waterproof.
Right.
The idea is that if moisture gets in that brick, in behind it, you want it to be able to get
out
without doing what you explained. That is, if it gets in there and it freezes, it's just going to pop the face right off the brick.
Right.
All right.
And the lighter the color of the brick, the more likely you are to have a problem.
Because it's softer.
It's softer. I was out on one last week. It was a white brick. And yes, there was a problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so would you recommend though that something be done to treat exterior brick?
If it's a real dark brick, not necessarily. If it's a medium to light brick, definitely.
Okay, so what will that do then? It's not going to keep water from soaking in.
Well, it keeps it from soaking in from the outside for the most part.
Okay.
And, it will definitely prolong it. You have to get recoated about every 7 years or so.
Okay.
Just spray on a coating of it.
All right. Well, let's go back here to phones. And the next person I believe we will talk to is somebody on line number one. Thank you very much. In Urbana. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. My question is about roofs. And there's this new kind of what they call architectural shingles. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
It's fancy design.
Yep.
And then I was wondering if they're any better than the old-fashioned three. Are they three-tab shingles? Is that what they call them?
They're very often are still three-tab shingles. They glue additional pieces on to give it a little texture.
Oh, okay.
And that's the basic difference on the so-called architectural shingle.
Okay. Well, I had a roofer that was pushing the architectural shingles, and now I'm sorry I got them. I think the other ones look better.
Well,
so I just wondered if they're supposed to be better or if you got a better price on them or what?
No, they're more expensive, generally speaking.
Really?
And then they also have difficulty if you are going to put a second roof on 20 years down the line or so, the fact that they do stick up, the new roof doesn't lay flat.
There's an uneven surface.
Right.
Yeah, okay. But they'd be equally efficient.
Yes.
They'd be
yes.
equally efficient. So I didn't do bad on that.
No, no.
Okay, so yeah. they're about equal.
Yeah, but it's basically an appearance situation.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Urbana, line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
My question is this. If treatment eats up, wood treatment eats up iron, what about use of anchor bolts in a wood, in a treated wood sill? It's half-inch bolts.
They need to be either stainless or triple-dipped galvanized.
Oh, I guess I better forget the use of treated wood then.
Well, not necessarily, but that...
So the bolts are already in the foundation wall.
Well, okay. Yeah, that can be a problem because they do make special bolts and special anchor plates and so on for use with this stuff. But if you're not using them, you're likely to get a considerable corrosion.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Let's see. We'll go to line number 2, and I think that's Urbana. Hello.
Yes. Question, I have a deck that's about 15 years old, and I've never done anything to it, and it's in okay shape. Anyway, I was wondering, should I go ahead at this point in time and use some sealer or, you know, whatever, not a waterproofer, but a water resistor?
I certainly would.
Okay. Any special considerations on a deck that old?
No, you may want to do a little bit of sanding to keep the splinters down. Because it's probably splintering a little bit at that age.
Right. It's got a few little spots in it. Okay. Yeah. Very good.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Would that keep the keep the deck also looking better?
Yes. Usually it will.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get so-called deck brighteners, which will basically they're bleach to restore the original color or come close to the original color at least. And... that's often done for appearance purposes.
Yeah. We have one on our house that I'm sure that's probably about 17 years old and was not looking real great. Last summer, I went out and rented a power washer, a really one with some muscle, to blast off all the dirt and the green stuff that's accumulated on there. And it looked an awful lot better after I did that.
Yes.
But I'm not sure should I go ahead and do something more. Maybe there's something I could do to keep it looking better longer.
Well, if you're happy with the color now, I would just go with a water repellent on it.
Okay.
If you aren't happy with the color now, then get one of the deck brighteners, so to speak, and see if you can change the color a little bit to more to your liking.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have about 15 minutes left in this first part of Focus 580 with our guest Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's on the program once a month. Always a Monday, we talk about home care and maintenance. And if you have questions, you are welcome to call. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. And if it would be long-distance call, that's 800-222-9455. With someone in Mahomet calling on cell phone, line 1. Hello.
Hi, Hank. I have two questions about gutters. The gutters in the front of my house, I need to have them to keep the water away from the base of the house, because otherwise my basement gets wet. But I've had a lot of different gutter guards, and none of them work. They're a pain to keep up there. They fall off. It seems to me that I might just go and get a downspout cover to keep these from going in. And once every month or so, just go up there with a garden hose and spray down the gutter. And I'm wondering what you think about that. Are there gutter guards that can be used that are good, or just doing that, would that work? And on the back of the house and the side of the house, the gutters are sagging. They're like 30 years old, and they have holes in them. And since they have holes in them, I'm not getting any water transport. And since I haven't had any problems in the back of the house because I'm on a hill, I thought maybe I should just take the gutters off because I don't know why I need them. There's nothing going into the house.
There's no reason why you can't take the gutters off. You probably need to use some paving blocks or something or other under the drip edge so you don't dig a trench with the water coming off the roof.
Okay.
But, yeah, that works. I don't have gutters on my house. What I did was Under the drip edge, I dug a trench about 8 inches deep, lined it with plastic, put a perforated tile in it going off, and then backfilled it with gravel so that anything that falls on there, the water goes through to the tile and out, and I haven't cleaned a gutter in at least 15 years.
That sounds good to me. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. And what do you, I know we've talked about this a lot. What do you do right at the door, at the front door? Is there
you put something? A deflector over the door that you can get a short metal deflector that will keep it from running down your neck while you're going through the door.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Our guest here, Hank Spies. You got a question, you can give us a call. We got some other people here ready to go. And I think we'll talk next with someone in Terre Haute, Indiana, line number 4. Hello.
Yes. I got some question about some sewer lines. Got some roots in them. And I heard you talking about the copper sulfate you can put in. Can you do that by yourself, or do you need a professional
sure.
to put that in?
This is a sanitary sewer?
Yes, sanitary sewer.
Yeah. Well, okay. Flush a little down the toilet once in a while. It comes in crystalline form is the cheapest way. It's sold to keep weeds out of farm ponds, so any of your local farm suppliers should have it. And, yes, the sewer people have it, too, at 3 times the price.
Okay. Now, would it be better if I could, I guess, hold the pipe up and kind of block it and let that sit in there a little longer, or would it be just as good just to let it flow on?
Well, it probably would be a little more effective if you temporarily blocked it and filled in, but I found that I don't really have much of a problem as long as I pitch some down the toilet fairly often.
How long does that usually take to kill the roots?
A month or two.
Month or two?
Yeah.
Do you really need to get it roto-rooted out before you do it, or can you just go ahead and do that?
You can go ahead and do that. It does a pretty good job.
Okay.
As long as you're not blocked, why, you don't really need the rooter.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Let's go to Farmer City. This is line number 2. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah. My daughter has a house, and we got a leak. We don't know where it's coming from. The kitchen was added on. It don't have no basement or anything underneath it. We've got a leak, and it's not leaking at the dishwasher or the sink. And there's a copper pipe going about 10 foot over to the basement. And we've got a leak that's going out about 7 foot to the east, where she's got a drop of about 6 inches, and the water's running around the baseboard right at that point. Would the copper pipe have a hole in it that's leaking? The water would be running that far?
Quite possible.
Well, I just have to dig up the floor or cut the floor out to find out, I suppose.
Probably so. Or what diameter pipe is it?
Looks like it's maybe at least an inch and a half.
Okay, now, pretty much so. I would be checking where the connection was made to that pipe in the floor, but
where it goes out of the sink to the floor.
Right.
Well, now it looks pretty good. It looks like it's got about a 45-degree. And then maybe on underneath the floor, it's got another 45, or, mm-hmm. you know, where it goes straight.
Yeah. Well, it's perfectly possible that it could corrode through.
Yeah. So I don't know what she purchased the house, and we don't know what's underneath there. So we might just have to rip the floor up there right there to see where it's at then.
Yeah. You can sometimes find out exactly where it's going on by running some hot water and then using an infrared gun to find out where the hot spot is.
Yeah, that might. What about a dye? We know the water's leaking. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I have been successful in a number of instances of finding leaks under slabs using hot water and an infrared thermometer.
Would it be best just get a contractor to check that out then, I suppose?
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Right.
Sure, enjoy your program.
Very good. Thank you. All right. Let's go next to Champagne. This is somebody else, line number 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
I have a question about a water line, our water service line. I received an advertisement for coverage for in case something happens in that area down to the shutoff valve.
Mm-hmm.
And they're offering this service for $5 a month, which will be added to my water bill. And I'm just wondering, my house is 42 years old. Do I have to worry about?
Well, it's not impossible, but like most insurance things, they're priced so the insurance company makes money.
Oh, I figured that. Now they say you could save up to $4,000 in an unexpected
water
line.
Well, okay, I think that's probably an awfully high figure.
Well, I wondered, and so I think I'll just ignore this.
That's what I did.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for the call. We have maybe about 5 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with our guest, Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. If somebody wants to call here, I'm sure we can get one or two more people in if we get a call right away. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We talked a little bit about air conditioning. Mm-hmm. And little sort of regular maintenance things that people maybe should be thinking about now that we're heading into the time when people are going to be using their air conditioning. Is there anything else that, because of the time of the year where we are, that, you know, in terms of seasonal kinds of things you'd want to remind people about?
No, other than keeping the airflow around the outside coil, cleaning the coil and so on, and the basic one is being sure that the filter is clean.
Okay.
Because if we don't get enough air circulation through the system, A, you won't be comfortable. B, you may freeze up the system.
All right. And you're talking about the filter that is inside. It's in the furnace, the
yes.
one that people periodically should be replacing throughout
right.
the year anyway.
The one they ignore most of the time.
Yeah. 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 Well, that sort of depends on how much you know attention you pay to it and if you think about having long-haired pets and so forth.
That's right.
Because it can get pretty... gunked up pretty quick, depending on what it is. It happens to be circulating through your duct.
Right. So it all depends on, you know, and there's a big difference in filters, too, because mm-hmm. Some of them are capable of taking out all the way down to tree pollens. Some of them catch dust mice. Not much
right.
of anything.
So it might also depend on how sensitive you are to some of these things.
What Absolutely.
Look at what level of filtration you're going to want.
Right.
All right. Let's talk with someone here in Champaign, line number one right here. Hello.
Hi. I have a 93% efficient furnace, and it has an induction blower for the combustion.
Yes.
That is nothing but a small plastic blower. And I'm just wondering if you can explain why those, when you replace them, cost on the order of $200 for that plastic blower. It's nothing special. The one I have failed because the impeller, the plastic, broke off four of the vanes and became severely out of balance.
I'd find another heating man.
No, that's the parts price.
That's parts price.
Yes.
There's no particularly good reason why they should be that expensive. We use the equivalent thing on computers, and they're $30. I see no reason why that should be the parts price for an induction fan.
That's the parts price on several different makes for the little plastic nothing motor. It's a 10th horsepower motor and fan.
Yeah, I agree that is... ridiculously priced, but you know, if you were to buy your automobile by the part, it would be about $200,000. So this is about the same kind of thing. That
my furnace is not a Porsche furnace.
Doesn't make any difference. A Chevy would be $200,000 if you bought it by the parts.
Okay, well, thank you, Lowe.
Well, thanks.
They're raping us on parts. Thanks.
And gave it a go. I guess that
I can't disagree.
We certainly have talked about the newer high efficiency furnaces and the advantages that you get with them. I suppose that if there is a downside, it is that there are more things that can go wrong than with the old.
Yeah, but
I haven't
run into this as being a major problem in most cases yet. The thing that happens most often is that the hose that connects the fan. Comes loose or something or other because we've got a control in there that's sensing whether their blower is working or not. And there's a pressure hose there, and sometimes that comes disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
But I've not run into major problems on fans, a lot of them.
Okay. Are we at the point where that where people can do painting outside?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Because I know that's one of the things we've talked about, that you want to, if you're going to do outside painting, you want to make sure that the temperature at night does not go below a certain point.
Yeah, no,
so
we're not. Much, okay. I don't think we've got a problem with that, yeah.
All right. Well, any last thing you'd like to mention?
No, I think that pretty well covers it. Be sure and change the air conditioner filter.
All right. Change those filters. Well, I thank you very much.
Thank you.
For being here. Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He is with us here on Focus 580 once a month. It's always a Monday to answer these kind of questions about home care and home maintenance.